Welcome to episode 38 of Digital Outbox. Hello once again, and thanks for joining us. This week it's myself, Ian, and Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
Hello.
I am here.
You are, thankfully.
Yes, we've just had a big giggling fit, which I'm hoping I'm over.
Well, all I did was mention Camelback.
Yeah, let's not do it. Yeah.
And that will just leave. We'll leave that thought for listeners.
Indeed, yes.
What's he doing?
It's far too just embedded in my vision at the moment as a Camelback.
Hmm. So, we've not a lot to talk about this week.
No, it's not been a heavy news story, has it? I mean, I think it's probably clear to everyone who listens, we're not massively phone orientated in the content that we kind of talk about regularly. I mean, obviously we talk about the iPhone, but we don't really cover anything else, it seems.
Yeah.
And it's been a mobile phone I don't even know what the title of it is.
No, do I? But it's in Barcelona, and I'm sure the weather was nice.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure everyone's having a fantastic time, and anyone who likes phones is probably in heaven.
The big story was, and I'm going to get this wrong, Windows Phone 7 Series.
I know. What the heck's that all about?
And you see the UI, and you think, this is lovely. Why choose that name?
Windows Phone or Windows 7 Phone, anything other than Windows 7, no, Windows Phone 7 Series.
Yes. Trips off the tongue.
It does. And they've just announced that they're going to be calling Windows 6.5 or 6 Windows Classic.
Indeed. Good luck. Good luck with buying one of those phones this year.
So they need to be sack their name convention person, but they can happily employ whoever's come up with the Windows 7.
Indeed. Well, I don't know what you thought. The UI is very different to everything else out there.
So a kind of description of it would be a big colourful homepage with big squares that sort of just look like huge buttons. But I'm not sure what they exactly call them. But they're broken. They break you down into sort of email, contacts, the phone functionality, your friends and things. And they actually present to you key information. So if someone's playing a game on Xbox Live, for example, and they log in, it will show you that. If an email's just arrived, it'll ping in and show you that you've just had an email come up. So it's kind of a way of consolidating what's going on and putting it and showing it to you in a nice homepage.
But very, very different. I mean, it's not when you said buttons, but they don't look like buttons. They just look like if you imagine a grid, and the grid's fully populated with a colour because you can change the colour, and within that coloured square, you have a photo or you have a status update. It's and each one of these can be connected. So this was their whole concept about live connections, and it was very animated. And
yeah, I've seen the sort of people having the demos, you know, shown to them by a Microsoft person, and also the online demo that they've got, sort of showing you in an idea of what it'll be like. And the way everything, when you click it, it sort of wobbles itself, and then it moves along, and so there's a bit of parallax type scrolling, and then it'll appear on screen. And it looks very slick, very swish.
I thought it was lovely. Not what I expected. There's a couple of bold things that I think I didn't expect them to do. They've basically said, yes, this is Windows Phone 7 Series, brand new start, your old apps won't work. 6.5, classic, blah, you know. And I think, to be honest, they had to do that. They had to do something bold and different, and they certainly have.
I think people were surprised they did it, but I don't think there was any other way around them. I think they had to do this.
Yeah.
I don't think they had much choice, but at least they didn't make that compromise. They've gone for that. In fact, they've been very specific in what the hardware has to be to run these things. They're not going to actually make the hardware themselves.
No.
But they're going to be very prescriptive on exactly what the hardware has to be.
Yes.
In order to run this.
And also that they're saying that the front end must remain the same. So no more of HTC or any other partners putting on their own front end.
Which, again, I think they kind of had to do, because, I mean, the reason why HTC were putting on their own front ends was to make up for the fact that the actual underlying Windows 6 architecture was not, touch friendly.
Yeah.
Not friendly at all, really, but not touch friendly specific. So yeah, I think that's a good move as well, as long as they keep up their development.
So a couple of interesting things. If you've looked at any of the Zune HD demos or videos, and of course we're in the UK, so we've never been able to actually use one. But that kind of front end is almost been the, I guess that's almost been the test or the kind of prototype for how Windows Phone 7 series actually runs. So lots of large text and lots of scrolling kind of, you know, large photographs and really, really nice. Another thing I thought was
interesting. Well, it works on the Zune. It's been well received.
Definitely. And I always thought the Zune. I always thought the Zune looked lovely. So another thing that's nice is Xbox Live baked in.
Yes, with inbuilt achievements as well for games as well, I understand.
And there seems to be two or three different things that looks like they're going to be, well, if you pick up like a Halo game, the idea is there'll be like a smaller partner game on or potentially a smaller partner game on your phone, which might unlock some more achievements or maybe be used alongside the game. And there'll also be smaller games, you know, like the iPhone style games, and also turn game based supported. You know, so if you're playing like a Scrabble or a strategy game, you can be playing multiple games, and it's almost like acting like an inbox or a next move. So there's a lot in there.
We at the moment we don't know how much of this is just, you know, not actually built. I mean, we've seen working models, haven't we? We've seen them showing working models, although probably beta code, I think you'd call it, at best.
Yes.
But this is due out, is it, towards the end of this year?
It's 6 months, at least, from now. And there was no talk about what happens, you know, UK, Europe. So.
Now, I don't know what your opinion of this is. I mean, 6 months is a fair while off now. I mean, they're obviously progressing really well, and they wanted to show us all. But isn't this what Apple does very well by not showing us all these things? Isn't this what builds, or do you think they're playing to their strengths by just doing what they would normally do, which is show a product?
I think they've had to come out and show something. They're losing market share to Apple. They're now losing market share to Google with all the Android phones. And they had nothing. They had to come out with something to say, even if it's a year away, I still think it would have been acceptable. And in some ways, Apple have done it before. I mean, all the rumours is that in March they'll probably show off the next iPhone OS, and even though you won't be able to get it for 3 months, it'll still be a number of months ahead of when they actually deliver it, just because they've got to get the developers, you know, some time to try and get their content ready for the new operating system.
A couple of other things I thought about. One was there's a lot of everything's live hooked up, so everything's you know, gathering data over the wire and over the net and over the 3G or whatever. But how's a battery going to be able to cope with that much?
Definitely
toing and froing.
I don't even just how visual the interface is. Mm. You know, with all these little tiles spinning around and, you know, constantly updating. And when they were talking about, you know, you can put a contact, could bring Shaquille's contact in and have that as a tile on my front page, and if he updates Facebook or Twitter or something else or Xbox Live, it would update. You know, for a lot of people, you know, there could be a load of content, you know, just spinning away and updating in that front page.
Yeah, getting 10 friends with tile's a good word. I like that word. We should use tile. So yeah, having 10 friends or, you know, and couple of email and Twitter feeds, whatever, that's a fair amount of toing and froing constantly to keep that going. And so interested to see what happens on the battery front, and it'd be good to see if they can come up with something that, you know, works and works for a good period away from you know, between charges. And I can't remember the other point I was gonna make. Well, I'm sure it was very important.
A couple other things for me was Outlook. So even using Outlook, if you look at what they've developed, just looks so unlike anything that Microsoft have done before.
Did they demo that? Because I didn't see that in any demos.
A couple of screenshots.
I think it's a mock-up, something.
Yeah, a couple of screenshots came out, and again, visually just looks totally different from what they're used to delivering.
It's the difference between developing a desktop application, which they have been doing for years, and developing a touch application, which they now seem to have got the hand of.
Yeah, and a couple of I mean, they're also, I'm not saying they've copied iPhone, but they're almost following a similar model. And again, I don't know if this is due to battery life, but Flash won't be supported at launch. With talk of it'll be a future, you know, upgrade.
I think didn't they say that they're not ruling it out.
No,
it's just not something they want to launch with.
No.
But they're happy to have it on the platform in future.
Yeah.
But and that's where their stance is different from Apple, and Apple have flatly come out and said, well, we just don't like it. We don't want it.
Oh yeah, definitely. So there was no Flash. And people were asking about, you know, where's the APIs, where's the dev environment, etc. And I think there's something coming in, and there's a bigger demo that they're going to do in March, where they take.
If there's one thing that Microsoft are going to do well, it's going to be doing a good set of APIs.
Yeah, so that they're going to do that in March. But also people ask about multitasking, and again, we're quite coy. And I'm sure it's all to do with battery life, because if you have two or three apps running, and that's what I've always hated. When I've seen Windows Mobile and I've had all this, you know, going to a kind of task area to see what's still running, to go and kill off things, it just feels all not what I want to be doing on a phone.
Yeah, the information we had out of the first demo was there's not any true multitasking.
Yeah.
But applications will be able to recover to the place you left them. So if you left on a particular section of the app, you know, next time you load it up, it will go back in there. And there will be a degree of linkage between applications, and applications will be able to talk to some extent, but running two applications simultaneously doesn't appear at the moment to be on the cards.
No.
They would have been stupid to do anything but copy an iPhone model, though, in some...
Maybe, because Android's not. I mean, and in some ways, it's like they've chosen a totally different UI, but in the background, they're falling the same way. Whereas Android are again, UI-wise, very similar to an iPhone if you compare both phones. But obviously a different strategy and with how the hardware they're running, how they partner with people. So it'll be interesting just to see which one's out as what is the best model to follow.
I did say a while back that if the Zoom phone came out, I'd probably get one. And I think this is as close, in fact, more than a Zoom phone, really, isn't it? So I'm quite interested in this. And I, at this stage, am very open to looking at buying one of these when it comes out.
I think it looks great. As soon as I saw the demos, I was just like, oh lord, that looks really nice. The only thing that put me off is just the investment I've made in apps, you know, on the iPhone.
And that's the point, and this is where it all is getting locked into the iPhone. Something else that you want comes along,
but it's locked into anything. You know, I've talked to you about you outside the podcast about, you know, moving to Mac, and if you look at the investment you've made in software licenses, that's one consideration. It's the same whatever platform. If I was on Android right now and I'd bought 100 apps, you know, it's going to be difficult just to flip.
I mean, that's one. It's we've talked about this before. There's a reason I probably haven't swapped to Apple yet, is the fact that I've got all my software and I can't afford to have it all again.
Definitely. Basically. But one thing they were successful in, it definitely made me look at the iPhone and think I'm using an old phone. Just the UI, I just was like, oh, wow, that's really nice.
It was just another level of... just thought, and they've thought it through, and they've gone a different route. Doesn't look as simplistic, but now that we're used to having smartphones in our pocket, actually I think we can cope with having something that's a little less simplistic.
Yeah, definitely. So game on. I really do think it's Apple versus Google versus Microsoft now.
I think it's good times.
It is good times. And I know there was just as you were saying at the start of this, there's a whole load of new hardware launched. I don't really care. And all the different HTC, whatever they were called. Crack on.
When you've got another Android phone, and that's always going to be the problem with Android, is another Android phone. For a hardware manufacturer, how do you distinguish yourself when it's running the same stuff?
And we said that about when the Nexus came out. You know, if you're an Android follower and you're wanting to have the latest phone, it must be fairly gutting to be each month feel you're behind.
We're probably missing out on some quite ingenious little gadgets that sit below smartphones, but you know, smartphones is where it's at as far as I'm concerned. So
definitely.
Anything else is not for the market I'm interested in looking at.
Definitely. So moving on, we have a number of Google stories, as we seem to have every week. They just seem to be on an absolute rampage.
They are on one,
and we're not even going to talk about the fact that they're now going to buy and sell energy, as well as moving into the broadband market and all the other stuff that they do.
Apparently, that's very standard for a US company, though, so I don't think we should be worried about it.
They are Skynet. Google Buzz. Now, I really liked Google Buzz last week. I was saying how I thought it was really nice and replaces my friend feed. And then it just got really busy. As in, every time I logged in, there was another 90 buzzies and another 10 people following me. And it just got really overwhelming really quickly.
I think I said this last week. It's kind of exponential.
Oh, but it's just this silly exponential. FenFeed seemed it had some tools that you could cope with the noise coming in. And it hid the comments away and you could see, you know, you could see the like the different things coming in. It says it was maybe like 10 comments and it was just far more manageable. Buzz is just like a noise, you know, and just, you know, posts, especially if you follow any of the, you know, your Robert Scobles of the world who have like, you know, on day one he followed 5,000 people so that it could broadcast, and it was just like, oh my goodness. And there's obviously all the privacy concerns we mentioned last week as well. And
yeah, they're still around very heavily, aren't they? Google have responded.
They've actually, you know, there's been 3 or 4 different updates over the last 10 days just to try and help. So it'll now no longer auto-create followers. It'll just suggest followers. It now no longer auto-connects to your photos and Google Reader shares. You've got to actually say, please connect them up.
All these things are very sensible and they should really have been there in the first place. It's almost like they rushed it out of their own internal testing.
It doesn't add up. You know, you look at Gmail being beta for 5 years and all the other things that they launch as alphas and betas, and this just comes out of nowhere. And it really was nowhere. Nobody expected this. And it was launched and it was available and everybody got it. It wasn't even like a Gmail, you know, scramble for invites. Can you imagine if this was like an invite-only thing? It would have slowly taken off. And totally contrasting to like Wave, you know, Wave with all the invites and the way they did it with that. Google Buzz, just everybody with Gmail got it. And I think it, in some ways it helped it because it got traction straight away. Straight away you could see how it worked and people were posting. But also it was all the bad things came along with it, all the noise, all the difficulty in managing that much content.
Yeah, it's almost like they said, well, let's put it out there. It's in a, you know, release friendly state, so it's not going to crash. And let's ride this out and see what happens. But what happened was the reason that, you know, they hadn't thought it through properly as far as from an end user's point of view. Say, like you said, they are responding to it and they're responding to it quickly. So it's not like when we've had the issues with Facebook and then Facebook have come back and said, okay, well, in 12 months time, we'll have solved that.
Yeah.
You know, they've actually put all these things in place. I mean, amazingly, it's amazing how quickly these guys can churn stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, it does.
It's not a simple thing to suddenly put all your suggestions in place and put all these privacy.
Not when you've got, you know, what, a couple of million people, if not more, using it. You know, it's not like you get 10 people using it in a beta environment and you can easily control what you're throwing out there.
Yep.
But I've actually used it less this week. I just found it.
So you used it a lot in the first week, and
yeah, it just very quickly got too much. Every time you went in, it was noise from people.
I even find Google Reader though. I get for me too much noise in that, and I have to end up skipping stuff because I don't have enough time to read through it all.
One thing I've noticed with Google Reader, and I don't know if they've confirmed it yet or not, but now as soon as you publish one of your posts, it appears in Google Reader. So it used to always be a delay of, I don't know, anything between an hour to like 3 or 4 hours, and it's now there almost instantaneously.
So they've got their checks going around the blogs. So
all that PubSub HubHub nonsense,
yeah,
and the RSS cloud all seems to be now baked in and working. So when I did a post yesterday about the Mac Mini, it was there in Google Reader within a minute.
Yeah, like I've found that it sometimes takes 2 hours for it to appear. So yeah, okay, that's interesting to keep an eye on that.
So I don't know if that's something alongside Buzz. And then when you look at the only thing I find about Google is they're all over the place. I still feel there's there's so much stuff that they're churning out, and it's like, you know, people don't really understand what their profile is and how to do it and how does it all work. And did you know you had a dashboard? And you can go to your dashboard and see all the services you've got via Google.
I mean, I know because I keep in touch with this thing, but I imagine that most people don't know.
Yeah, and it's just, everything's all hidden away. You know, when you sign into Google, it still says there's documents and there's mail and there's calendar and here's more. And then here's more. And it still doesn't show you your profile easily or your dashboard. And Somebody's got to get to grips with all that.
I don't know how they keep control of everything, and maybe this Buzz thing is showing that they haven't quite kept control of everything properly. But if you try and, you know, pin down what Google is, you just can't.
Skynet.
Well, they'll need to start building robots soon to do that.
A couple other products that they've brought out as well. Google Goggles, which is still the worst name ever. Google Goggles Translation. So they demoed an experimental Android visual search app that translates the text that it captures in images. So at the moment it's only German to English, but I'm sure, as you're saying, the rate they churn it out, by the end of the year, no doubt it'll be available. And
why German to English? That seems awfully weird.
Because I'm guessing that's the developer was maybe German.
Must be a German developer.
So yeah, if you're going to Germany this year,
we'll call him Hans.
Better than Adolf.
It's not a popular name, that one.
I have no idea if it is or not. Schnell.
Do you know an Adolf? I don't know an Adolf.
I don't know a Hans either.
No, that's true.
If this was a certain American podcast, I'd be now going rat hole. So Google Goggles, and there's also Google Shopping, and again Android only, and it will allow you to scan a barcode and take a picture of a product. Or what was the other one? I think just do a normal voice search. Do a voice search for a product and it'll come back with best price. And I think they're now definitely getting their apps out first on Android, and all they're saying is, yeah, it'll come to the iPhone with no date or it looks like any time pressure at all to bring it out.
Yeah, they obviously have an interest in they're going to bring it to iPhone, but as we see the other way around, work on your own platform first and then get it out on others later.
Absolutely. I was always surprised when it was the other way around.
But I don't have too much... I've got any comments to make on this, really. It just, you know, there are more apps that are coming out, and yeah, it's clever. But, you know, they've announced them in the past anyway, so the fact they're coming out is good.
Yeah, but there's a whole load of stuff to bring. Like Google Wave, will it be that successful? I don't know. I really still don't have that many use cases for all that hype it got.
What, for Wave, you mean?
Is that what I said? Oh. No.
Yeah, no, you did say it. I was just wondering whether you were talking about these apps, whether these apps are going to work. Because these apps, I think, will work, but they'll take maybe a couple of generations to figure out how they're going to integrate with other things, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to another Google product, Chrome. Now, Chrome for Macs have been a bit behind the Windows version. But in the last week, it now has caught up quite a bit, and it now has Bookmark Sync and also extensions. So I've now stopped using Firefox at home.
I've been Chrome and Safari. So I've been Chrome for a while now, and going back to Firefox, it's not necessarily that web pages load slower, but the actual application does, for sure.
The dog.
Takes a long, long time. I mean, and it's funny how you don't really notice it when you go to Google, but as soon as you go, you know, you don't notice the speed increase, but you certainly notice the decrease when you go backwards.
And it's maybe just because I've used Firefox for so long. And so at home, I'm using Safari mostly, and I use Firefox as a kind of secondary browser for doing most of the podcast stuff, just because I need to be logged in as different Google accounts. And what a difference between Chrome and Firefox. And even people will say, oh yeah, Firefox and extensions and Chrome will go the same way. I've got the extensions in that I need, so I'm syncing my bookmarks via Xmarx, I'm blocking my Flash, I've got a couple other ones in there.
And it's still screaming along.
Yeah, happy as Larry.
Yeah, and it is brilliant when it comes to these web apps. You definitely notice a difference when something's really heavily JavaScript focused.
Oh, definitely.
You really notice the difference when you're loading pages. But one thing I have noticed is for badly coded JavaScript, actually, it's sometimes too fast. I think it gets there before the page has done everything it needs to do.
Right, okay.
And I've noticed a few times where every time you load a page for the first time, it doesn't work. But if you click refresh, it does. And say my uneducated response to that is, I think it's just going too quick for what, you know, for other processes.
Mm.
I've only noticed it with badly coded sites though. So,
well, I really think I really think they could dent Firefox's market share. I really do see them. This is just a far better browser.
Well, we're on the 1st of March. Microsoft are doing their browser, you know, offering user their new browsers. Yes. So we've talked about this in the past. So this is going to be, it's going to basically pop up a window and say, you are currently using whatever, and these ones are available. Do you want to change? Yes or no? And which ones do you want to change to? So that's going to cause an effect in the browser market, or will it? I don't really know, but it's certainly got potential to. So I think there's going to be some interesting stuff going on in browsers for the next couple of months.
Indeed. Moving on to specifically, some iPhone apps are coming from the BBC. So they're developing, finally, a news app and a sports app with, later in the year, there'll be a iPlayer app as well. Happy days?
Yes. Yes, good stuff for consumers. Bad stuff for the Newspaper Publishers Association,
yes,
who aren't very happy at all.
No, bless.
They think BBC releasing an app into a marketplace that's new and emerging will cripple it, because obviously the BBC won't charge, and they want to. So they're scrambling around a little bit, saying, you know, why are BBC spending this money on such a niche market, when clearly the reason they want to keep it to themselves is that they see it as the biggest market developing.
Mm. But in some ways it's, and I know people are going to say, oh yeah, developing for iPhone, why developing for iPhone? But they're actually going to bring it out for Android and also Blackberries as well.
Yeah, and once you get onto all those platforms, suddenly it's no longer a niche market anymore, is it?
Exactly.
It's the market that we pay them to develop content for, really.
And more and more, I think, just as smartphones have really taken off the last couple of years, more and more people are just going to consume that kind of news, you know, whether it's video or audio or text, they're going to consume it on mobiles.
Now, I can see why other publishers are getting annoyed, because they're desperately scrambling around trying to find where they can get some money to carry on their businesses. And I think we're all agreed that it wouldn't be right just to have the BBC in the world of news and news information. That would be a bad thing. So I guess their argument is, BBC coming in here offering everything for free means that this is one less market where we can actually start making a living again. So there is that side of this argument. I don't know where you stand on that.
Well, the only thing I do feel is, I mean, this Newspaper Publishers Association said it was a developing market. It's been a market for 2 years. Sky's had its video app, its news app, its sports app, its TV app out for about a year now. I can think back to Telegraph, Independent. They've all got apps out.
And
Guardian brought their app out a couple of months ago, which is a paid-for app, and it's done really well.
Yeah, but they're not all paid for, so they can't even have that argument, can they?
No. So part of me feels so great. It's me as a consumer. I'm paying my license fee. I want to be able to consume that, you know, that rich content wherever I go.
Yeah, I think if I was another news firm, I would be a bit annoyed by the fact that, you know, yes, as a consumer, and the fact that we pay for this, we want to be able to consume it everywhere.
Tough.
But they don't have that option their money. But then again, I think of someone like Sky and the money they get through their TV.
Yeah.
They could easily channel that money to delivering their content elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, without monetizing it, by making Sky, having, you know, a Sky subscription into more than just having the TV, they could turn their offering into a much better proposition.
And they've also, I mean, they're doing for £6 a month, you can get, I don't know, 15, 20 channels worth on your iPhone. Quality is really good. And I'm sure there's a market there for people who would rather pay for that rather than paying for a full Sky TV package.
Yep.
One of the omissions we noticed about the iPad launch was a lot, there was a lot of comment beforehand that is going to revolutionise the market, the magazine industry, and, you know, you'd have New York Times, etc. And we did see New York Times, but not a lot of magazines. But Wired have now confirmed that they will be on the iPad by summer. And I don't know if you've seen the front end for it or not.
No, I haven't looked at it yet.
So they've done some demos this week using an Adobe Air application. They use Adobe tools to build this, and they've demoed it this week. It's a lovely looking application. So all the kind of all the things you'd want to take advantage of, you know, nice clear visual text, videos, photographs. Just looked a really rich environment.
I think I said before, this is the one big thing which I thought was going to be a selling point for the iPad, which just was completely not there, where they're now they expect all the publishers to build their own application to show off their magazine. When surely a better route would have been to develop a really slick way that the magazine publisher can just plug in.
Well, and I would have thought, and maybe I'm just being naive, I would have thought that the magazine industry would have looked at iTunes and thought, if we could have a one place for all the, you know, almost like a shop front, that Apple could, you know, front up and all our magazines are available through it, that would be the ideal way. But
yeah, it sounds perfect. I mean, that bookshelf that you see on the Apple bookstore,
yeah,
stocked with magazines that you can just click on.
But I'm sure there was an alliance of different magazine publishers before Christmas, and they banded together because they didn't want Apple to take control of their market.
So which instead, they've got no market.
Which I think is a really old way of thinking. You know, they're now having to probably either they group together or individually they're going to do it as Wired have done.
There's going to be the problem is Wired have obviously had to develop their own, you know, front end and stuff, and yep. I'm sure they'll do a good job.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have to reinvent the wheel, and as consumers, it's not going to be like you pick up your magazine and use it like you would a paper one.
No, definitely.
You're going to have to learn your front ends and have to go, you know, click on a different link every time. If you've got 12 magazines, you're going to have 12 links on your homepage, aren't you?
Yes.
Rather than one link that then has the 12 magazines in it.
And it's even things like, you know, Wired might give you the ability to email off a bit of text to a friend, and I don't know, another magazine, FHM, might not. You know, all the different things that they're going to start to try and compete on. And the only thing I would say, I looked at the app and thought, you know, if I had an iPad, I'd probably cancel my paper subscription and just use this. I'm assuming it's going to be paid for. You know, and I would assume probably even the same price. I'd be quite happy paying the same price to get the same content.
Yeah, I think there's an expectation you pay slightly less.
I wonder if would you pay more if there was no adverts?
I personally, in magazines, don't mind having adverts, but then in different forms. So if they had running video adverts, they'd probably get in my way a bit.
I'm just wondering if you're going to start to see those type of options. You know, so I don't know, £2 a month if you're happy with adverts, or a fiver if you want just the actual articles themselves.
I think long term, I see a granular future where, you know, well, as soon as you can get content that's granular enough for what you want, you will just pay for the individual bits of content that you need or want to consume.
Well, I'm thinking of Starship Troopers. Do you want to know more? And you you click and your credit card just makes a little ching noise every time you want to know more.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's the information that you want, I think you'd be happy to consume. I mean, you probably end up paying less because you're not paying for the stuff you don't want.
Yes. But that's the kind of everybody wants that with Sky, don't they? Instead of paying my £70 a month, I want to just pay £40 a month and give me the actual 20 or 30 channels that I watch rather than the 600.
For me, it's maybe 20 channels.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
But I have to. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. I don't spend anywhere near £70 though. Do you spend £70?
Ouch. Well, but because you've got the full thing plus HD plus sports plus movies plus multi room.
Yeah, see, I don't do multi-room, that's why I got my Sling Player.
Ooh, shiver up my spine. Anyway. Yeah.
£70. See, that's a lot every year, isn't it? And for what, if you think what the BBC does with its licence fee, was that just over £90 a year?
I know.
How come Sky can't do some pretty incredible things for...
I think, to be fair to Sky, I think some of the stuff they've done in the iPhone I've actually been really impressed with. So...
Okay. So they are doing stuff.
I think they are doing some things, yeah. And I think they're miles ahead of anybody else in HD. You know, so for me, I see a real massive difference between SD and HD, and I've really appreciate the difference.
Yeah, I think that obviously with the new Freeview HD, I think HD is going to, you know, slowly impregnate itself. Is that a good word? Not really.
I don't think so.
anyway, it's going to slowly spread around other than Sky. But yes, they have done a good job. They are the best HD platform.
We'll keep that word for chat roulette.
Impregnate, yes.
I don't know if impregnate and starting them young is a good link.
A good segue here.
Through the week in Gadget, I had a story on a Fisher-Price IXL, which is basically an iPad for kids, or an iPhone, or an iPod Touch for kids. It's aimed at 3 to 6-year-olds. It's a touch screen. They've modelled the front end on an iPhone, and that it's just got big buttons. In fact, it actually looks like the Windows 7 series. I jest. But basically, you can plug into your PC, and you can throw MP3s on it for kids, etc. And it really is an iPod Touch or an iPad for kids.
And Marilyn Manson MP3s on there, yeah.
Lucky old kids. I never had anything like this when I was a lad. I got an orange. That was it.
I got a lump of coal.
Exactly. I don't know why somebody wouldn't just buy them a touch. Just if they break it, they break it. Maybe I've never got kids, obviously.
Yeah, I think... I think, yes, you're far removed from that.
Thank goodness. So, yeah, that looked a nice product from Fisher-Price. Sony. I was quite surprised at this. Sony have exited the OLED market in Japan.
So they're going. Why just in Japan?
I don't know. According to the article, they're going to stop selling it in Japan, but they're still going to be active in Europe and America. But I couldn't still believe they're only still selling their 11-inch OLED that they started selling 2 years ago, and it's still £3,500.
Yeah, this is kind of goes to the story we were talking about towards the end of last year, which was why hasn't this moved on?
And that's why.
And exactly, they clearly can't find a way of scaling this up.
No.
And keeping it cost effective.
And LG were quoted in articles saying that they believe big screen OLEDs are coming in 2012, but big screens were still under 32 inch.
Yeah, I think big screen for OLED is different, because they were talking, didn't they talk about 2016 before we're going to see, you know, over 32 inch screens, yep, that are regular priced?
And the analysts of the market are saying it's 7 years until they fall to today's LCD values, which is... So if you think about buying a TV and you're thinking OLED, forget about it. Just crack on and either buy one now or wait for the 3D stuff. But after seeing Avatar the other night, I won't be waiting for 3D. The 3D was very odd.
I'm interested to know what you felt about it.
Well, the 3D was odd in that. So we're in the IMAX. So first of all, it is a massive screen. And you're wearing these damn ugly specs that after a couple of hours got really uncomfortable, really started digging in my head.
How long is Avatar?
2 hours, 40 minutes.
So the fact that you actually noticed that, I don't suppose you were actually particularly thinking about it. It just happened that it started hurting you.
So I didn't get sore eyes or a sore head. And there was a warning at the start that you might get motion sickness. So obviously people are suffering, and there have been reports on the internet that people get sore heads, etc. The film started off, and the first couple of scenes, I was like, "There's no 3D. Am I missing the point?" And then there was a particular scene in they were coming out of I don't know, 6 years of sleep and all that kind of nonsense, because they were traveling through space. And in that one scene, you could really get a really nice sense of depth, and I was like, that's pretty nice. But straight away, I felt there wasn't much clarity and brightness about the image. It felt like a funny image I was looking at. And as you went through the film, there were some times it worked really well. Some of the water scenes were just a real sense of depth. But other times it was all very deliberately done. And your eyes were focusing on things in the foreground when clearly you should have been looking at the main action going on in the middle.
Well,
and you couldn't focus.
Well, this is it. I think there's been people saying that, you know, can eyes get confused, and are there wider issues here, because there is no different focus length?
No, because it's a cheat, it's a con. So the more I looked at it, I was like, I'm kind of, yes, it's nice, but yes, it's not. And by the end of it, I just felt a bit kind of meh about it. There was nothing that made me think if I was going to spend a grand on a telly right now, I'd just go and buy an LCD. I wouldn't worry about the 3D. And obviously I don't know the price. I mean, if it's only adding a couple hundred quid on,
I think it's going to get to the stage where it's just another sticker on the TV, and you might as well get the TV that's got that sticker on it.
Yeah.
But I think we talked about this before as well, that I don't think people are willing to pay a price premium on this, but no. They, like I said, they would pay to have a sticker on a box.
Well, the Panasonic, and I think the Panasonic glasses that come with the TV, there's only two comes with it, and they're using the shutter technology. If you break one of the glasses or you want a spare one, so if you've got like a family of four and you need another two, it's £100 per glasses.
Yeah, it's not. They're not like chucked down and
no.
Like and you want them to be like remotes, don't you? Where you can just put them wherever and
yeah,
you know, even they fall down the sofa, it doesn't matter.
If your glasses were like me, I don't want to be wearing glasses on top of glasses. And that's what I had to do at the cinema the other night. And they're big enough, but it's just very uncomfortable.
There's apparently is interest. Retailers are getting questions, and people are interested in doing this, especially after films like Avatar. What everyone's raving about at the moment is 3D technology in games, far more than.
I must admit, some of the feedback on Wipeout last year just made me want to play it in 3D.
The whole section on 3D where there's not even anything in the show notes.
Sorry about that. Show notes.
How did that happen?
There's only two of us as well, and we're almost at an hour. Oh no, we're not. We're only at 40 minutes. Nah, calm down.
All good.
Right, a couple of fun stories to finish off on, and then we can do our exciting picks. The first one is pleaserobme.com.
What's that, Ian?
Well,
does exactly what it says on the tin.
Pretty much, all it did was aggregate public check-ins from Foursquare or Gwala or Twitter, where people have said, "I've just left home and checked in at my local coffee house." The first version of it had, you could search by area or by Twitter handle or Foursquare handle, so you could easily just narrow it down. So straight away you could say in Glasgow, someone who's just left their house. You could go to that Twitter user's accounts, and then you realise, well, if he's turned on his locational option when he's tweeting, you know where he stays, and you now know he's not in the house.
So basically, I mean,
and you still need to do a bit of narrowing down. If he's living in a set of flats, you're not going to know which one. But if he's living on a detached house, it's pretty damn sure you know where it is.
Now they've come out and said that you know this is to try and raise awareness of the information people are putting out there.
They're wanting to hand this over to a service that can use it for education.
But I think they started this up as a bit of a laugh, under the pretense of, I mean, you wouldn't call it pre-robbed me. Well, maybe you would, just to show people what they are kind of doing. Well, but it's still using people's data and presenting it.
It's data that's out there that they're happy to share. I mean, they've not hacked in anywhere and stolen the data. This is all data that's out there, and all they've done is apply a couple of filters to it to say, just show me these ones, please.
Yeah, and it's not obviously going to be good for burglars anyway, because one person isn't home doesn't mean that the house is empty. But I think they are right in showing people that they've got at least have an awareness of what their information could be used for.
Yeah. And they've taken off the search options now, so that was only in the first couple of days. Then they got a lot of press, they took those options away. So
yeah, so they shouldn't actually make it easier than ever to see if someone really was wanting to use this for
aims. To me, it was more of a, whether they were trying to attract some press or not, they certainly have done it.
But yeah, they've managed it.
Yeah, I don't see anything that wrong with it. Unlike chat roulette.
Chat roulette. Did we even cover this last week? I can't remember.
I don't know, but I'm covering it again because it's funny. So
I don't think we did.
So chat roulette, and now that you've said that, maybe we did.
No, it wasn't. It's because we spoke to Paul about it during the week, I think. Didn't he point this out?
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember anyway.
I don't know. Oh, he did. He did. He did on Twitter, didn't he?
That's it.
So chat roulette, very simple. You go to chatroulette.com and you play a game. And I'm going to do it live now.
So the idea is that you just go to a website, you click play, and it takes your audio and it takes your webcam, and it just connects you to a random user.
Yes.
And so that random user can be anyone around the globe that is also playing the game.
Yes.
And obviously, you you have no control over who that person is going to end up being. So maybe you could start describing someone who's chatting to you.
Well, basically at the moment, all you get are basically the random weirdos, which is basically desperate guys just like me, sitting there hoping that you're going to see some lassie taking a top off. That is basically the, hey, so somebody just give me some gang symbol, which is quite amusing. And there's a naked guy, don't like that. And there's a guy in his bed, not naked.
Yeah.
And oh, there's a naked guy again. So there's a trend here.
So there's clearly a social need for this. Isn't this what people used to use NetMeeting for? I think that's why they stopped that, wasn't it?
Well, oh,
so the idea is that it could be used for anything. You're supposed to start chatting to strangers, but actually it's just a place for sexual acts.
There's a guy playing with his cock. How nice. I'm sure we're going to see Stephen Fry in a minute.
But yeah. Do you think he plays, does he?
Oh, hello. Ah. That wasn't a cock. So yeah, that's Chatroulette.
So if you want to go and look at cocks, Chatroulette is the place to go.
And move on to our picks. I really have to go first because I don't think we could follow up Chatroulette with your one. Over the last few weeks, I guess I've become not obsessed, but I've recommended quite a few sites that have some sort of bookmarklet that really adds to it. So Boxy had it, and Huff Duffer had it as well, so you could click on it and it just starts to build up. You get more and more bookmarklets building up. Henry recommended the Zootools one last week, which was the same kind of idea.
I use some web accessibility ones as well, just to do quick checks on sites.
Yeah, so there's like more and more. So my bookmarks bar is just getting massive. And there's another bookmarklet that hopefully will solve it called Quix. Quix. So if you go to quixapp.com, so that's quixapp.com, and you pull the bookmark into your browser bar, this is really, it basically gives you a lot of commands, keyboard-driven commands, so that instead of having lots of separate bookmarklets or by visiting different sites and doing things, you can just do it all from your Quix bookmarklet. So if I give some examples, if I wanted to do an Amazon search, I fire up Quix, I type in A space and what I want to search for, and I'll run the search. If I want to do a Flickr search, it's F space, do the search. If I want to do a Google search, it's G space, do the Google search. And there's things like IMDb and Google Maps built in, and so there's a whole lot of different search sites built in. But you can also do things like FB, which shares the current page in Facebook. GB bookmarks it with Google Bookmarks. T space username, we'll do a Twitter user search. S space something, we'll do a Twitter search.
Do you get to define these, or are they all defined by the applet?
So the ones I'm listing just now are all defined by the applet. So there's a whole lot of WordPress ones you can do. There's a whole lot of search engine optimization ones you can do. There's webmaster ones, which is like go and get my current IP and load Firebug Lite. Go and look host information for this domain, etc. And there's also some like URL shorteners, and there's also some things that, especially in the Mac, there's some apps tie in really nicely, so I can do CSS edit and it'll load the current page into an app called CSS edit and show me all the CSS. So there's some nice things like that, but the good thing is you can extend it as well, so I can build up my own command list and host it on the web and create a new bookmarklet that points to my command list as well as the ones in the core Quix app.
So it needs some sort of web server for you to put your
I mean you can put it on basically anywhere. You know, if you've got a web account somewhere, you can put it in that. If you've got a Dropbox account, you can throw it in there. If you're using Mobile Me, you can throw it in there. Anywhere really.
It sounds really very useful. I mean, the other question I've got, having not used it, is obviously if you're using it more and more and more, you're going to have quite a few commands in there.
Yes.
How is there a quick command reminder anywhere? Does it?
I guess there's a couple of things to bear in mind. One of the advantages I've got in Safari is if I do command one, so command is almost like the Windows key. If I do command one, it launches the first bookmarklet. So I do command one and it pops up this little window. And in Chrome and Firefox, you can use some plugins to actually do the same shortcut. So you can have a shortcut to launch it, which makes it all very keyboard driven.
So yeah, you'd have to move away from your keyboard straight onto it. Yeah.
Unfortunately, in IE, there's not really a way of getting that shortcut. So you still have to...
Unfortunately or just unsurprisingly?
Well, it's just that... And I've been looking for something as well. There's nothing really that... There's no way to extend IE to allow you to have a shortcut that points to that bookmarklet. Mm. You know, so it's Chrome. So Safari has it out of the box, and Chrome and Firefox have plugins that allow you to assign keyboard shortcuts to different things. So, and so if I do command one and type in help, it'll list all the commands, including the ones in my custom command list.
Okay.
If I type debug, it refreshes the custom command list. So in my custom ones, I've got things like Google Actions, so calendar, search Gmail. I can subscribe to a new Google Reader, a new feed in Google Reader, or I can actually just take a post somewhere else and just share it in Google Reader. And there's things like I've added in my Boxy, searching on Newsbin, the Huff Duffer stuff I was talking about, Henry's website, he recommended Zootool, I've added that in as well, PDF my URL. So all you do is PDF in return, and it just takes the URL, excellent, throws it into the PDF creator. So there's a whole lot of things that it's now just easy to get to via my Quix.
It sounds almost like a command line for the browser.
It is. And Firefox,
and I guess from that point of view, it's going to be pretty geek focused. Someone who, you know, is deep into doing all these things anyway. I don't think this is a consumer product really, but it certainly sounds good.
It's I'd never turn around and say it's like everybody's going to use it, but I would say for the discernible listener of Digital Outbox, it isn't a nice essential add-on to the browser. And I just feel it just tied in nicely with the amount of picks I've had over the last, you know, few months that have all been adding more and more things. This is one way of kind of narrowing it down, and also it just makes it far easier. You know, an IMDb search, instead of going to IMDb and typing in your search, you just do it all from there.
This is definitely interesting. I will look into it. I don't use bookmarks. I can't even say it. Bookmarklets enough at the moment, probably to warrant it. But actually, maybe I'd end up using them more if I did install this.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
It's getting used to using this kind of thing on a day-to-day basis, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just replacing other bookmarklets. You know, as I said, it's just.
No, exactly. And so it's just finding whether it fits into your everyday. What you do every day.
Yeah.
But if you're doing a lot of posting to Facebook or Flickr, what you want to do, Flickr searches a lot, it sounds just, really, really useful.
Yeah, there's just a whole other things. And even if there's something that you're doing quite often, if there's a certain website that you search, you know, even like if it's Pirate Bay or BBC News or whatever, you can set it up and just say BBC space, whatever you're searching for, and back it comes. And it just saves a couple of steps. So that's my pick. And I'll try and... I've kind of fell behind with my pick blood postings. I think this one kind of merits a decent post just to explain how it works and just, you know, what you can do with it. So I'll try and get that up fairly quickly this time.
I have definitely fallen behind with my pick
posts. Yeah, I threw up.
I'll try and get up to date with him.
I threw up one this morning. I'll probably do another one or two tonight. He says boldly, knowing that he'll never do them. But hey.
So my pick this week. right. Now, I've been pretty weak over picks over the last week because I've just been pretty busy.
But come on strong with this one.
Oh, yes. This is probably my best yet. now, there is a trend, and I don't know whether it's a very recent one, but it's certainly one that I've come across recently. I can't remember even where I heard it. But where people take a picture of themselves, say, holding their baby, and then they swap the heads over in Photoshop. Now, as a simple concept, it sounds quite, you know, boring. If you just do a search on Google and type in baby head swap images and then just have a look through the first few results you get back, and you'll see the general idea. And for comic effect, it just puts you in a good mood. There's some very... It's just very funny. Go and do it. I urge you to have a go. Just type in baby head swap images into Google and have a look at some of the pages that are up there. It's worthwhile.
And it's left me with a happy smiley face.
Some of them are truly, truly disturbing, yet they're still very, very funny.
I thought you would be talking about wearing a woolly mask.
Not yet, no.
I'm just looking forward to seeing what you would wear. And I wondered if that was because of Chatterlet.
The woolly mask. Yeah. No. That's all because that's my sister. Blame my sister.
I don't want to know.
Yeah, I shouldn't. Yeah, okay. I'm going to stop digging that hole.
That's even. Anyway,
that could be taken bad as well.
On that note, if you want to find out more about us, website is digitaloutbox.com. You can email us on info@digitaloutbox.com. Thanks to Tam for spotting my deliberate mistake last week and not putting the show notes up. That was just a little test to see if
someone reads the show notes.
Indeed. And it just makes me want to put even more effort into doing them. And Skype and Twitter were on there as Digital Outbox. Chris, your blog?
Blog chrishutchinson.org.uk. Not been updated recently, but hopefully we'll get back to doing that at some point. And Twitter as Cheesy UK.
Once the F1 season kicks in, we'll get a few posts from you, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Not long to go.
Well, we've also had the start of the NASCAR, which I've missed blog post on. Yeah.
And my blog is eend.net and my Twitter is Shweepa. So, thanks again for joining us and we'll catch you again soon.
Later. Camel pack.
Not as funny as Chatterlet, which I've kept going all through that. Honestly, every one in five are cocks. I think it's just bad.
Well, I'd say it depends if you want to go looking for cocks, really. But I'm sure if you want to go looking for cocks, it's very good.
I don't, honest.
I want you to fire up your webcam, attach your camel pack.
What, with this little blue tube?
With this little blue tube.
But I need to go and fill it with Diet Brew.
It would never recover as well.
Oh, no, it would be sticky for years. Oh, that's horrid. Right, I need to stop this.
Come off the roulette.
Hopefully I will never visit it again. If I do, it just means I've hit a low point.